Oh man, guys, we've had big episodes before, but this is like, this is, and I asked Jonathan before if I can call this an extravaganza. I'm Connor Warr. This is Bad Football Movies. Jonathan Jones is back, one of the flagship members of the Bad Football Movies podcast. Jenny Vrentis, Gary Gramling. I'm very excited. I'm in great company. We have probably the biggest and most recognizable football movie that we've done to date. We're really outdoing ourselves for people right now.
Pulling out all the stops.
That's right. Jonathan, welcome.
Man, I'm so excited to be back. I know God. I was here for our maiden voyage. It's been, you know, 2 or 3 months. You and Jenny, you know, some others, but really you and Jenny have been holding it down. I love it. Really, Connor.
Connor's committed every week. Just rise and grind, you know, one week at a time.
What a soldier, right? A guy that every week needs to drink at work on
Stacking
the Wednesday.
Bricks.
Chopping wood.
And Gary liked his appearance last week so much that he's decided to join us for another one. So that's awesome.
Yeah, I haven't seen the movie, so I just wanted to see the movie.
You've never seen Jerry Maguire?
No, that's why I'm here on a lot of levels.
That statement. One is that you just don't enjoy our company. You just want to listen to the movie, but that's okay. The same might be true for some of the readers. They might not enjoy our opinions, but they do want to learn more about Jerry Maguire.
and they don't have Wikipedia. Wikipedia is blocked on their computer.
This is their only hope.
Yeah.
So I will start out by saying that I saw Jerry Maguire about 6 years ago, and I will say off the bat that I don't like this movie. I don't think it's a good football movie. I think that I was trying to decide what it is about the movie that bothers me, and I think that, you know, like, some animals can hear things on different frequencies and it just doesn't jibe. I think that's Tom Cruise with me. Like,
really?
Nothing with him lands for me.
Not, like, Minority Report, not Top Gun.
Nothing.
Really?
Like, and I think it's just like I don't hear him. Like, it must be like a dog whistle, like a literal piercing sound or something that bothers me and leaves me with like an unpleasant experience.
But I love Cameron Crowe films, and Cameron Crowe has directed this, which I'm surprised, Gary, you haven't seen. I mean, Cameron Crowe, of course, the director of Say Anything, Almost Famous, Vanilla Sky, We Bought a Zoo. But really, Almost Famous. And so the guy who makes Almost Famous, I'm going to watch Jerry Maguire.
I first watched Jerry Maguire as a freshman in high school, so it would have been about 1999. Does that jibe with when the movie
1996
came out?
It came
okay,
out, yeah.
So it would have been a couple of years later, and I remember that it was eighth grade, but it was around this time because I was in French class and we had to use all of the different words, and you had to have a picture of someone to write a sentence. So I cut out the small son in the movie and wrote, "Il est mignon. He is cute." And I remember my father did not see the photo I had cut out, and he goes, "He is cute. Who's he?" Like, thinking that this was like some love interest of his, you know, preteen daughter, yeah, or teen daughter, yeah, however old I was. 14-year-old
daughter.
14-year-old daughter, yeah. So it was around that time that I first saw the movie.
Do you think you saw it, like, basically, we're both from Pennsylvania, that most people from Pennsylvania have seen any sort of seminal movie of that time is, you know, you wait for your parents to get the free HBO, and then you, like, catch it 3 years after it came from theater. Like, I feel like I never saw a big movie in theaters when I lived at home, you know?
And
Blockbuster was maybe too far away sometimes, and so you had to wait for that little window, that teaser of, like, Showtime or HBO, and then they show all the good movies in that time to get you to subscribe, and then you subscribe, and then it's terrible movies after that. But I feel like that's when I probably saw Jerry Maguire.
I think my play was Blockbuster. Blockbuster was close for me. It was a very short drive.
Did y'all have like a cheap movie theater that would show the movies in the theater after they had been in the main theater? So we had one of those outside of Charlotte.
Yep.
And, you know, for $1.50 or $2, like in 2002, you could go see 2001's Training Day.
We had the Dollar Cinemas in Einan, Pennsylvania, where I think at least three times I saw Blank Check.
Oh, wow.
You know that movie,
of
Blank
course,
Check?
Yeah.
Did you ever see that movie, Blank Check?
No.
It was like where a kid, I think, like, there's a lot of plot holes in this.
Of course.
But the kid somehow gets a blank check and then, like, writes it to himself.
I think Sinbad was in it.
For $1 million and then, wow, like, just buys all these extravagant things and, you know, kind of a real, like, you know, something to get you fired up as a kid. But so this movie is Tom Cruise. He's a football agent, Cuba Gooding Jr. I mean, there's a love interest here. I mean, there's a lot to this movie. I don't know. I'm excited that Gary hasn't seen it before. Like, what are your expectations going in?
I know that Cuba Gooding Jr. has that catchphrase. I watched the my main knowledge of this movie is the SNL monologue he did after this movie came out. It was a really good monologue, and they captured it with cameras and now have it on the internet. So if you want to take a moment and watch it, it features actually a young Tina Fey making a cameo on that one. Wow. But yeah, that's I don't know. I think I'll like it. I think I'll like it fine. It seems like a movie that people enjoy, even if they think it's a little bit corny.
I'm interested to see how the whole love thing hits me the second time, because when you see it, when we did probably 6 to 10 years ago, your idea of a relationship, it's like, oh, okay, that's fine, that's how all this stuff happens, you know. And sure, I feel like that's probably going to hit me in a different way, as a lot of these movies have, right, you know, over time.
Yeah, you just, you know, the older you get, the more jaded you get about romantic relationships. So I'm sure that I'll find some of the dialogue probably troubling, probably, you know, misogynistic. I'm just really waiting for it to hit me that way.
And something to keep an eye on, guys, as we move on, is I, you know, now we've all covered football. I mean, we've all been doing this for a long time since the movie came out. Is Tom Cruise a good agent? You know, I think that's something that we gotta keep an eye on.
We can debate.
You know, yeah, something we can definitely sink our teeth into. So we're gonna get started here, and we'll check back in a little ways into Jerry Maguire. Here's the one thing: we're about half an hour into this movie, I forgot what a tour de force of cute kids Jerry Maguire is. Right? You've got Renee Zellweger's son, you've got Rod Tidwell's son, just you know, little cute kids, you know. I think that is like, that's the one thing that can just round out this movie, even the most cold-hearted person like me.
And so if anyone's taking anything away from what you have seen in the first 30 minutes of Jerry Maguire, it's that Connor Orr loves little kids.
Well,
and just these little kids, but I mean, you know, just 13
not your
years
own
ago.
just the ones on camera.
I mean, the one kid's on the airplane baggage claim rolling around giving people high fives.
Jonathan Lipnicki.
Yeah, right. Rod Tidwell's son is just parroting his dad and yelling all this hilarious stuff. I mean, God, I will say that was like my major takeaway. So what we've seen so far is basically the very short rise and fall of Jerry Maguire. He's a bad agent who forces people to play through concussions to get bonuses, and then one night has an epiphany where we need smaller agencies, more attention, personal attention to clients. It's about health. It's about relationships, blah, blah, blah. And that ends up getting him fired by Jay Moore at the very appropriately named Sports Management International. The agent stuff here is dead on. Like, I feel like the personalities, the vague, important-sounding titles of things, the style of dress, the general internal panic. I mean, it all checks out for me, at least.
Hairstyles.
Jay Moore remembered to pull up the little antenna on his cell phone before he started calling people.
Yeah. I did love the speed dials. You know, I miss speed dialing.
I will say this, like, and so it's set up where Jerry Maguire loses every client except for Cuba Gooding Jr., Rod Tidwell, and Renee Zellweger, who overhears him on the plane talking about what a good, important guy he is. She leaves the company to come with him. We all kind of know what happens here in this movie, but at the time, in a vacuum, sort of a major risk for Renee here, right? I mean, you've got a kid to support here, you're at Sport Management International, and now you're following this crazy person out the door of a building.
Yeah. Even her cubicle mate seems to think it's ill-advised. She protests when she stands up. Gary, you were about to
No,
make
I
point.
Was just reckless, just downright reckless.
Would you like so? Let's say this happened tomorrow at Sports Illustrated.
Well,
but she also is clearly in love with him as well.
She is in love with him. That's true.
And so that's the deciding factor. One of the most interesting things to me was when he was trying to retain his clients and saying anything that he had to say in order to retain them. Of course, Jay Moore is telling him, "Yeah, you know, it was a drug induced something I don't want to say." He also says that he doesn't like black people to a black athlete. And so the black athlete then repeats it to Jerry. And Jerry goes, "What? I'm Mr. Black People." And so everyone remembers to show me the money, but really what stood out to me was I'm Mr. Black People.
Mr. Black People.
And then when Cuba Gooding Jr. makes him yell, "I love black people," in the office was also very funny.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just picture, like, I give Tom Cruise credit here. Like, I do think that I liked him maybe less at the time. I think the second time through here, I'm warming up to him a little bit. But that like, would you ever stage a scene like that? Like, we've all dreamed of doing something like this, but when everybody follows you out of the office. But this is, like, the obviously the worst nightmare scenario. Would you ever try to do something like this where you try to just say, I'm leaving, and who's coming with me?
I think I would only do it if I know the answer. Like, he thought that he knew the answer, and he was wrong. It's almost like public proposals. You know, you better be sure that she's going to say yes, or don't do a public proposal. Like, if you're going to do this where there are 20 cubicles and many different offices, make sure that you know that you're going to get a decent chunk of people.
How many would you need to feel good about that? Like, say you're in an office with, like, I don't know, there's probably what? There's 75 people, 80 people here in this scene here that we're saying in the cubicles. How many people need to come with you when you stage this coup so that you feel good about yourself?
People or, you know, inanimate objects?
Fish.
Fish. So he's got, what, two fish and then Dorothy?
And Dorothy.
Or just one fish?
One fish.
One fish.
Flipper.
One fish. Flipper.
Flipper,
yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. How many people?
You need four is the minimum because you want more than can fit into one cab. And then you have a caravan leaving. But
yeah, Michael Scott Paper Company, like Michael Scott took two with him in the office, Ryan and Pam. And,
that's right.
You know, Jerry, one of the great sports agents of his time, could only get an accountant.
Well, and that's, I don't know, that's where I come back to. He just went, what, like 1 for 50 on retaining clients? You can't then go out there and ask people to follow you. That's selfish on Jerry's part.
True.
And it's reckless on Dorothy's part.
Who would you imagine? So Rod Tidwell is your one remaining client, and we've learned a little bit about him in this opening scene that he is a wide receiver that's not afraid to go over the middle to make the tough catches. What is his sort of analog in the NFL? Like, are we looking at a Wes Welker type, or are we looking at a Derek Mason type? Like, who is Cuba Gooding Jr., and do you feel good about leaving an agency and starting over with just this person in particular?
Derek Mason, great.
You think so?
Great analogy,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, just like kind of a guy who was willing to do just about everything as a receiver.
Yeah, but I think it's also good because, you know, Welker's too high profile, I think.
True.
Right? I mean, Tidwell plays in Arizona. It's not, you know, in the center of, you know, I don't know if Arizona is successful at this time in this movie, but
1996 would have been.
No, not really. They may have even been the Phoenix Cardinals at that point. Oh, excuse me. We're talking about Arizona State, so no, but also the Phoenix Cardinals were not that good either.
I like the idea, though, of just, like, staging this, like, ridiculous coup. I will say some of my early takeaways. Some of the 90s, like, nostalgia really hits me. The flip-top cell phone, the fashion. The stand-up posters. I don't know if anybody ever noticed, but, like, everybody was just eating, like, very unhealthy things in 90s movies, right? It was always, like, a sandwich on, like, white bread, you know, or, like, a very, like, large white roll, which was, like, what Jay Moore was eating, and, like, big suits with, like, the fat ties, and, like, it all just, you know, it hits a note for me, I think.
Yeah, you know, your Brussels sprouts that you had on the pizza this afternoon for lunch. No one was having pizza with Brussels sprouts in 1990.
I think I would be fired from SMI for just ordering a Brussels sprout pizza.
But I also think it speaks to cinema, right? Because at the time, I'm going to make a great point here. At the time, they had transitioned out of everyone smoking cigarettes, right? So Jay Moore, who was clearly a villain at this point,
yes,
would typically be smoking a cigarette outside of his office.
Yeah.
But as they had phased out, it's like, all right, give him an In-N-Out burger.
Yeah.
Speaking of cinema, you made a great point about the rolling opening credits that just really, you know,
they just kept going. 6.5 minutes in, and then Cameron Crowe, written and directed by Cameron Crowe, as Jerry Maguire is getting a standing ovation from his fellow co-workers who then turn their backs on him.
Where are all those people? So aren't they ashamed to have given him a standing ovation and then not be following him?
I think so, right?
Well,
I mean,
the paycheck's too good.
Is that what it is?
That's
sometimes serious. It's about more than a paycheck, you know?
They're all phony, and they all just saw him lose.
I will say that, right? That is, you know, that is the thing, right? It's a glass office. Everybody, I mean, if that happened anywhere, right? It's any sort of major office drama, everyone's zeroing in and trying to find out what's going on. I've never been in a situation like that before where, you know, somebody's literally still allowed to be in the office and is, like why was he allowed to make all the phone calls from the office with use of his personal secretary?
Poor planning by Jay Moore, it was...
I do want to be a part of something like this, so I do hope that someone does this at some point. Maybe not here.
I was going to say, do you guys want to make a pact right now?
I think, though, it's one of those things like, I think, Jenny, you and I were talking about this on one of the other podcasts that we do about how, like, even if you don't have the leverage, like, and it's time to hold out, you just hold out and then you hope that it happens. And, you know, I do think that you have to respect Tom Cruise in the sort of way that's like all the leverage is gone, everything is gone now, and you're sort of just running on heart and grit and determination or whatever it is. And I think you do have to give him a little bit of credit for coming out there and just saying, you know what, who's coming with me? And I still think a little bit of him knew, because he looked crazy when he went out crazy. There. He just looked like a crazy person. He wasn't together. Wasn't his best suit day.
No, that olive suit.
It was like an olive color, you know. As I say to someone wearing an olive
color. Olive is terrible. Why would anyone purchase this color? I have to say, you're a little bit more sympathetic to Tom Cruise than I expected you to be.
I know. I'm worried that this is turning me around.
Yeah, well, this seems to always happen, Connor.
It's going to happen. Another hour and a half of this movie, and you're going to be full-on Tom Cruise fan. You're going to be like, all right, Mission Impossible 3, let's go.
Woo! Well, luckily we got... I forgot to announce our beer of the day. We're doing a little Montauk Wave Chaser IPA, and then Bronx Brewery American Pale Ale.
Could you grab me another Montauk?
You got it, yeah. All right, so we're getting back to Jerry Maguire here, and... I don't know. We'll see what happens. I mean, Rod Tidwell's going to get the money, probably. I would think so. Yeah, everybody's
not saying it, so yeah.
Give it to him.
So give him the money. So not only do you lose the number one pick in the NFL draft, you dump your fiance, and then you just get beat up in the NFL draft, like media room?
MTV room. Boy, we've all been there before.
So we're about 50 minutes into the movie. Jerry Maguire starts the slow climb back up to rebuilding the agency, holds on to Rod Tidwell, thinks he holds on to Cushman, the prospective number one overall pick, the quarterback in the draft. And at the last minute, Cushman double-crosses him, signs with Jay Moore, and SMI, you know, just sort of a really crappy time to be Tom Cruise.
And you know, Tom Cruise's character, Jerry Maguire, he was doing everything right. And he was trying to get the best deal for his client. And we were wondering, Connor, while we were watching it, what's the motive for Cushman's to and his team to double-cross Jerry Maguire? And the incredible line, Cushman's dad comes through and he was like, "You were in the lobby with that black guy." And, of course, talking about Rod Tidwell, who was Cuba Gooding Jr.'s character, who was not feeling very loved by Jerry. In fact, he left the lobby and was begging Jerry to show him some love.
Yeah. This man only has so much love, and it's being tested right now, you know? There's not enough Tom Cruise to go around right now.
And Jerry Maguire was introducing Rod Tidwell to everyone, like all of the movers and shakers in NFL media down on the floor. And then he says, "Rod Tidwell, you know, 1550. He had 1,550 yards in the 1995 season, which I looked this up. It would have ranked him fifth in the NFL that year in receiving yards.
Imagine like going to the floor of like the Marriott Marquis during Super Bowl week and being like, you guys know my client Odell Beckham, right? You know, like, he's pretty good. You know,
there's nobody playing fantasy football back then.
I it's funny that, you know, you and I are both talking about sort of this. You know, this dad is very removed and quiet, the dad of Cushman, the number one overall pick, but seems to have an idea of where he wants his kid to go, and there's sort of a Machiavellian thing there, sort of a maybe a Manning family reference there by Cameron Crowe, I don't know, or an or an Elway family reference?
I think it's more Elway because we're still talking 96, right? So Peyton comes out in 97, Eli later. So it's certainly, oh, wow, there's a dad who's trying to engineer his son to not go to this one place but end up in Denver as the number one overall pick.
Cameron Crowe, visionary director, anticipating the Manning situation.
If it is not based on the Manning family situation, it certainly inspired the Manning family situation.
It's one of the two, right?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I think that, you know, as viewers of this movie, we're supposed to see Tom Cruise as the guy who's doing it all right because he left the big evil sports agency and, you know, he's paying attention to his clients. But, you know, so I don't know. At this point in the movie, is Tom Cruise a good agent? Is Jerry Maguire a good agent? If you were a football player, would you feel okay? If you were Rod Tidwell, would you feel okay with what you're getting so far?
I mean, it's tough. He has one client. Again, he tried to retain all his clients before, and everybody said no. And he ended up with one guy who just sort of yelled at him over the phone for a little while, and then they agreed to stay together. But, yeah, I have to lean toward... No, just... Sometimes you got to read other people's body language. And right now, the body language says... No, not very good.
Well, and, you know, Rod was not all that pleased with Jerry. He thought that he should have better endorsement deals. Here he has just a waterbed endorsement deal.
Waterbed warehouse.
Yeah, the greatest waterbed warehouse in Phoenix, Arizona. And so he thinks that he should be getting some better deals. His wife, who is well-versed in this, believes that he should be getting better deals. So, no, so far he has not been a very good agent. And we should point out Regina King is Rod Tidwell's wife in this.
Oh,
the
nice.
Great,
yeah.
Regina King.
Is there a way to pull up, I know there's a way to pull it up, but can you pull up the top five receivers from this past year? And I'm wondering if any of them don't have shoe deals, because that was Rod Tidwell's big thing, right? Is that they were talking about the four cornerstones of marketing, and it was like soft drinks, shoes, clothing and something else. I don't know if it was like maybe fast food.
So the top five, it was Julio Jones who was with Under Armour. I don't know if that's out there yet or not, but he's no longer with Under Armour. I may be breaking that news. But yeah.
Yes! That's what this podcast is for.
Yeah. DeAndre Hopkins, I believe he's with Nike. Mike Evans is probably with Nike. Tyreek Hill, I don't know if anybody's touching him. And Juju Smith-Schuster, who may still be too young to have an actual real deal.
But will have one soon.
Right.
I will say that, you know, some of the agents that you do talk to, like, over the course of this time, especially during draft week, do describe draft prospects with an unrealistic expectation of endorsement deals, that once they reach the NFL, and even if they have a moderately good season, right, are, you know, like, well, why aren't I a Nike spokesperson? And it's like, well, you're the third cornerback for the Titans. And so, you know, that's just kind of how this goes. And, you know, it makes me think of, I covered the Giants for a couple years as a beat reporter, and, you know, Rashad Jennings was signed to be their number one running back, and he was their bell cow running back for that awful season, I think, where they started 0-6 and then came back to finish like 7-9. So they had a good second half of the season. But his gig was, and if anybody is from the New Jersey, New York area, you'll know Bob's Discount Mattress Warehouse. And it is, Bob is like this, like, you know, this small, frail white guy that goes into Ashley Furniture and all these other nice furniture stores and makes rip-off versions of of these, like, nice, trendy furniture pieces that are a little bit cheaper and, you know, a little bit more affordable. And that was his deal for a long time. And it was funny, you know, when you would go into the press box, you would see Bob, like, walking back and forth from Giants games. And you're like, okay, that's it. So I do feel for Tom Cruise a little bit here. Like, you know, this endorsement money, it's not free money. You know, not everybody, you know, like Jalen Ramsey, perfect example, today showed up at Jaguars camp in an armored van with the Adidas logo plastered all over it. But even he, as a top five cornerback in the NFL, is not like a universally recognized, like, endorsement figure.
No.
It's hard to be endorsed in the NFL.
You have to be a quarterback, right? You talk about Adidas, and for so long they were going after the fast guys. They were going after the fast wide receivers and the corners.
Right.
And what they have found is they really did kind of luck out with Dak Prescott and Patrick Mahomes.
For sure.
And, you know, Under Armour, for example, was going after the cheaper guys back in the day. Well, what did they luck at? Go back to 2015 when they had the year
year of all years where they had Steph Curry, who they got for very cheap in the at the turn of the decade, Jordan Spieth, who they bought into as he left Texas, and Cam Newton, who they got because Auburn was obviously an Under Armour school. And so a lot of times you luck into that stuff, but then also a lot of these guys... Ooh, another tidbit. You know, I did this...
Dropping bombs!
Well, I did this Apparel Wars story back during the Combine, and mm-hmm. I picked up a lot of stuff that I didn't get to put in there. But, you know, Jordan Brand, which just signed Zion Williamson, everyone was looking at this deal, and it's reported to be about worth $75 million. People are like, well, Zion should be worth a lot more than that. And I agree, he probably is worth more than that. But Jordan Brand, as I've heard, they do not spend the kind of money on athletes as other brands, because they know that their logo means something to athletes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so a lot of these guys in the NFL who are with Jordan Brand are not raking in the money. However, they are one of the very few who can wear Jordan cleats on the field.
What is the one brand, across the spectrum, that you would totally compromise your integrity for and just shill yourself out for? What would it be? Go ahead, Gary. Right.
Probably Bob's Discount. Come on down. Right, Connor? Right. That's the thing he says.
Yes.
It's that and
yes.
Show me the money. Those yep. are the two most popular catchphrases of the 2000s.
Connor, what say you?
Nintendo. Mm. Right? Or, you know.
That's a good one. Yeah.
You know, I think I would I would do commercials and look a little suspicious for Nintendo, I think. Yeah.
I would do it for like a rideshare app or maybe a scooter app. Like, just give me a lifetime supply of Ubers or like Lime scooters and I'll do it.
I love how we're all kind of like joking, but in the back of our heads we're like, Nike, Grey Goose, Jack Daniels. Probably a lot more of those, but okay. So we're at the state of play here where Jerry Maguire is going back to his former mentor to try to just figure this out, down to one client. I'm interested, Gary, where do you see this going? I mean, we all, the three of us kind of know where this movie is headed, but, where do you see this going?
Well, I mean, obviously the romance part of the story is going to an obvious place, but I'm curious as to how he is going to make a living going forward. Perhaps we need a sequel here. He has Rod Tidwell, who's kind of maybe the Keenan Allen is where I'm going to put him as far as Q rating right now.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't think that's enough to feed your family and your soon to be new girlfriend's adorable conveyor belt riding son
with no health insurance.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, well, it was the 90s, so.
Oh, that's true.
This is a good exercise before we go back. So he makes the common agent take right now is 3%, although there's sort of like a giant war going on in the agent community right now where a lot of people are coming in and doing half price, right, or 1.5% or 1% deals.
Trust us, agents will tell us all about it.
but right now, Sport Management International, we're at this time in football history, I guess, where they're getting 4%. So what was like a good, I wonder what a good top five receiver is probably earning in 1996, and then what 4% of that is.
Well, we know that the number one quarterback, Cushman, is about to make a 7-year deal worth $30 million with a signing bonus of $8 million, so 7 for 38, which is basically 5 point something per year.
This is pre rookie wage scale too.
That's right.
I mean, that's not Jamarcus Russell money.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Are you surprised by my quick division?
No, that's amazing. Yeah, I didn't double check it. I guess I didn't kind of double check it.
Yeah.
But
it's common core. Yeah,
that's right.
So a receiver would probably be what? Like,
I mean, with
half
on a
of
new
that?
Yeah, on a new deal. Yeah, I mean, he's going to be lucky to get $2 million, right?
Yeah, $2.5 million maybe
a year. Yeah.
So $2.5 million. Oh God. Here we go. You got to add another zero times 0.04. That's $100,000.
$100,000 for Jerry Maguire, Renee Zellweger, Jonathan Lipnicki, and if they have any emergency medical bills.
And that kid's got glasses.
Yeah.
He might need braces.
No, he's going to stay in those glasses for a few years.
Well, God help Jerry Maguire. Let's hope he turns it around here, because the expenses are mounting, and football in the 90s was not the same powerhouse that it is right now. So let's see if he figures it out. I still can't let this go. We're not going back to this movie for a minute, because like the math just is not working out for like Jerry Maguire has one client, and it's not even the best receiver in the NFL. So Jonathan and I are kind of just crunching some numbers right now while we're waiting for everybody to get back into the studio. And so if I had to ask you how much you think Jerry Rice made over the course of his entire 20-year career, how much 20-year career?
20-year career, where obviously he's the greatest wide receiver ever. He was the best wide receiver in the NFL for a majority of those 20 years. You know, numbers not being what they would be, I would have to say over 20 years, he had to make 85 on the low end, 100 on the high end. Which like, what was it? Peyton Manning made, like, I think 240. You know, Adrian Peterson's in the news right now. He's played 11 or 12 years. He's made $95 million. So over 20 years, 85 to 100 million for Jerry Rice.
So this is Jerry Rice's Spotrac contract page, and we're looking at estimated career earnings, total cash. So after 2004, 20 seasons, $42.3 million.
Wow.
And this is and Rod Tidwell is not even Jerry Rice, right? So, you know, we would get, I don't know, assume what, half of that?
No. Less? That's incredible.
So if Jerry Maguire had represented Jerry Rice,
right,
over the entirety of his 20-year career,
and that was his only client,
and he was making 4%, $1.6 million, which again is nothing to shake a stick at.
Well, no, it is over 20 years.
Over 20 years, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you're representing the best wide receiver in NFL history, and you're basically making $80,000 per year pre-tax.
How is he going to survive? Like, this is like,
right. Right, which 80 grand a year is nothing to shake a stick at, but when you are running your own business and Renee Zellweger and Jonathan Lipnicki are depending on you.
They're on the payroll. Yeah. Come on. I mean, this is ridiculous. I don't know. We're trying to think of, and we mentioned that before, that maybe over the course of time, like in terms of relative recognition and whatever, Derek Mason might be kind of that best, like, you know, Rod Tidwell comparison, but I don't know. He was the fifth best receiver in 1996, so that makes him like what? Like Isaac Bruce?
Roughly an Isaac Bruce, who I think came into the league in 94, and so that's 3 years in. So we are estimating that Rod Tidwell is nearing the end of his rookie deal.
Yeah.
And he is now entering the second contract, the show me the money contract. And so, yeah, that would make enough sense, where if he came in the 93-94 season.
How did agents survive from the 90s?
Well, but here's why they survived.
They had more than one player.
They had more than one player. There weren't as many agents. And then also, they didn't have to pay for the Exos training, right? So they didn't have to pay, they didn't have to go to every one of their players' games all the time, worried that another agent was going to scoop their guy. Yep. You know, and so it was a different time back then.
Forget about Exos. Rod Tidwell can't get an exterminator. He's got ants in his house. His house is flooding. Like, wow. You know. Yeah, jeez.
Hate it for Rod. I hope he gets his money. We'll have to see.
Yeah, we'll have to see. Not to harp on this, but again, we're only 10 minutes further in the movie, but now Jerry Maguire has made an initial contract demand to the GM of the Cardinals, who's also Glenn Frey, the late lead singer of the Philadelphia, just the Eagles. $10 million over 4 years.
Gosh.
Renee Zellweger, if you can be on this call, run. Like, this is not a sustainable business plan. This is not a sustainable life.
There's going to be some heartache tonight.
Wow. I hate you so much.
Hurry up. No, hurry up. Cut it. We reach our high point.
All right. So on $10 million, let's do this here. Rod Tidwell, even if he made the $10 million, Jerry Maguire takes his 4% cut.
It's $400,000.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. We shouldn't need a calculator.
No, we really should not. Wow. You really should have taken it easy there.
I was just saying, Montauk Brewery is taking this one over.
How many more Eagles punts can John work into this?
I don't know. You're already gone.
Oh, man. Here I was thinking this was going to be the best episode ever, and it turned out to be the worst.
Here you were thinking you were going to have a peaceful, easy feeling.
I wish I could contribute, but I can't think of a single song right now.
Hotel California?
So we've just kind of passed the scene where Jerry loses Kush and then shows up drunk at Renee Zellweger's house, and it's just sort of a gross human being in general, I think. Doesn't really conform to the moment where she's very excited about him coming over, tries to dress the right way, and try to make him some food and beer in a frosted mug, which was a big power move at the time, you know. And
Or would know. He frequently had dates over and served them beer in frosted mugs in the 90s as a precocious dater, or was early on the scene.
This was one of my calling cards back then. You know, what can I say?
sort of. Well, no.
So he says, "Don't worry, I'm back." And then he flies to Arizona to see Rod Tidwell practice, asks the GM to meet him out for drinks. He doesn't. And then he calls him and makes this offer. I she left this other agency to be with him. At most, if they're 50-50 partners over the life of this 4-year deal, she has $200,000 pre-tax. I'm a little worried about, what's the kid's name?
Ray.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about Ray. What if Ray needs braces,
Have you factored in inflation? a nickel was a lot of money in 1996.
Ray might have been investing in pets.com back then. So, I mean, maybe he gets in on the early cyber bubble, and Ray seems like a smart little kid.
All of a sudden, he's like, he's sitting on whitehouse.gov.
So now we just, we had harped over the contract numbers. Now we have the contract numbers. I mean, just, you got to do better than that, I think, for Rod Tidwell to build an agency here.
Jerry is trying to do better, Connor. He's pleading with the GM.
That's true.
He's asking him to do him a favor, which, as we know, works very well in contract negotiations with NFL general managers. Hey, Bill Belichick, you need to do me a favor. My business is struggling to get off the ground. I've got this cute kid with this woman I may eventually be with. Bill will just, sacrifice a little extra from the under the salary cap.
It's like, oh yeah, young love. Who doesn't get it? And the kid, the on the baggage claim, no problem. Here's an extra $6 million.
And then we also we've paused the movie here at an hour six in, and the GM at his desk. You would think it would be filled with papers and documents, maybe a PC. No, it's just a ton of supplements and pills.
it's a lot of multivitamins. Like this is the beginning of a pyramid scheme right here. Multi-level marketing. Sorry.
Yeah. Right. You're going to get a Facebook message from this guy shortly, and he's going to be like, "Hey, do you know any highly motivated friends looking to make some passive income?"
You've been in my heart lately. I wanted to reach out to you. I thought you could use these products.
Jenny, how many of those do you have in, your archive folder?
Shakeology,
Do you think that they either went to Glenn Frey's Eagles office and just put a bunch of Cardinals stuff in there, or do you think that they went to a Cardinals office and put a bunch of Eagles stuff in there? How do you think
this is the equivalent of Game of Thrones with a coffee cup in the middle of the day? Just someone forgot to clear that out.
Yeah, no, I would like to think this is Glenn's actual office filled with Metamucil and other supplements.
Oh, man. I'm sure that this is explained somewhere in some point in the movie trivia, but when you think of like, oh, okay, I just did a brilliant job of casting all these agents, get this real feel for the agents, and you're okay, now I need a general manager in the 90s, like a real football guy, and your first thought is the guitar player from the Eagles. Like, how does that work? You know, like, where does this come from?
Well, they wanted somebody, you know, a guy who really hadn't acted before, perhaps a new kid in town.
Get off the Eagles Wikipedia page and stop putting subtitles.
It's literally on. This is right now. I just want the audience. We should be transparent.
Yeah, yeah. Jonathan is not a huge Eagles fan. He's a huge Wikipedia fan.
I'm still working out how to fit Tequila Sunrise and James Dean in this.
I would just like to note two other things I noticed on the desk. That box near his wrist appears to be a Gas X box.
That is definitely Gas X. Definitely it's 100% Gas X.
That's a big consumer kind of recognizes. And I Am the King nameplate. Is that what that
says? That is. It says I Am the King, but right in front of a faux Heisman Trophy. You know, they obviously could not get the real Heisman Trophy. The Heisman Trust has a strong copyright on it.
He's not stiff-arming. He's just kind of idly carrying
the
He's
trying the ball. To make it to the boundary.
That's the Hoosman Award.
All right, so at this point, you know, it just felt like we had to break in there. But so the agency is on the brink here. The romance is on the brink, and we'll see what happens here. But there's a lot of contract talks yet to be done. Still only one client, so we'll see if Jerry Maguire can turn it around.
About.
You can't. The reason why. Okay, so we're breaking in here. There's stuff going on.
Child actors hot in the first century. Child actors who grew up to be hot.
No. Yeah, we don't need. Okay, so the reason that we're kind of breaking in here is Jonathan and I just got in an argument. This is sort of the romantic peak of the movie where they go out on a date and you know, everything works out and they're. Necking on the porch, I guess you could say.
You can't say that. Yeah, they're about to start going steady.
We all necking. Sat uncomfortably and watched it together.
just a few of us co-workers.
A little heated. Might not be with you.
But we're debating how old Ray is in the movie, and then Gary brought up that sometimes that you hire short, older people to play younger people because they're cute then and they can say more things. But I thought always that the deal was that you had to get twins, like the Olsen twins, because the heat from the lamps was so hot that you couldn't have...
He feels dumb even saying it.
I don't think it sounds
like you are like describing how the dinosaurs went extinct or something.
No, yeah. It's like the studio lights in there, it like wherever you're filming, are very warm. And so you can't have a little baby under like warm lights for very long. So that's why you gotta have twins, because you constantly got to cycle them out.
I mean, I believe that it is hot on a set, but you're acting like it's a buffet. The reason that they have twins, like the Olsen twins, or like the kid Adam Sandler in Big Daddy, right?
Yeah.
That kid was a twin, and it was played by two different boys, and it's because of child labor laws. It's, like, you can't have all the hours of shooting. You can't force a 3.5-year-old to work for all that time. That's the point.
Do you think it's possible that it's because of child labor laws and the heat from the lamps?
No.
I mean, that in Connor's defense, that might have played into it. Like when they were putting these laws together.
Can
like,
someone Google
the
like Olsen twins heat lamps Full House? Like,
I mean, if there were literally like a two-hour movie on just the birth of Jesus and they had to switch out the babies in the manger, I would maybe understand what you were saying.
Because we're talking about two different things. You're talking about like Big Daddy age kids.
With Jonathan Lipnicki in this movie, while it was being filmed, he was 5 years old, and we believe that him to be 4 or 5 in this film. So Gary's point earlier, he actually was born in 1990. The film would have been filmed in 95, 96. He turned 6 in October of 96, so he was probably 5 during the filming of this movie.
Jonathan, really quick with the Google draw during this podcast.
That wasn't Google. His name's Jonathan.
I've ceded my Google rights because the movie is playing off of my computer, so all of my calculating, everything is... Yeah, all right, anyway.
I just want to say that I have Googled Olsen twins heat lamp.
Oh, Oh, you probably end up on my Etsy shop.
So the first entries are some shopping items where you can purchase a lamp. Mary-Kate Olsen is now the tan twin. She's bizarrely bronzed.
Okay, so I feel like I'm not going to be vindicated.
Olsen twins wear winter jackets during May heat wave in NYC. Uh-huh. Ashley versus Mary-Kate, which Olsen twin brings the heat? I think we are unfortunately going down an uncomfortable road here. So,
like, Connor was treating him like General Tso's chicken.
I
just to be the voice of reason, I think Connor raises a point with some validity, but it's kind of...
Studio lights are very warm. Like, this is a lit environment. Yeah. There are giant lamps that are bearing down on these children, and somebody needs to protect them.
But it's kind of like, why can't we make the interns here, like, I don't know, report things in, like, live volcanoes? Well, there's labor laws. On top of that, also, you don't want to kill them.
There's labor laws and there's heat laws. Don't ever forget that. Okay, you know, I guess I lost that. But
yeah,
you know what's,
yeah, take that L.
But you know what also stinks about that is I've said that, a version of that, with some conviction to like to 100 people
to
in
like
my life.
NFL GMs.
all the NFL GMs I talked to Full House about. Yeah,
he was talking to John Elway one time, and he's like, you know, that one time.
You know, I mean, everybody knows that.
Kieran Culkin replaced Macaulay for one of those scenes.
Because of the heat in the lamps.
Hot out here today. Let me tell you about the Full House.
Here's another one, that toxic heat lamps, ? It's said that heat lamps can release toxic fumes that will kill birds. So you've got to be looking out for the birds on set.
I'm just saying. You know? All right.
Okay. Oh,
back to reality here where romantically things seem to be going well for Tom Cruise.
One might say they're heating up.
Boy, the movie.
We are off the rails. But, okay, so things are going well romantically, but still, no deal for Rod Tidwell.
No deal for Jerry yet, also, because she left him on the porch.
She did leave him on the porch, wisely, I think, right? Time to pump the brakes on this a little bit, you know?
Yeah, now that you've ruined your entire life following this guy.
Yeah. Make him kind of prove to you that he can be some sort of a worthwhile agent. Okay, back to Jerry Maguire. So I'm remembering why I didn't like Tom Cruise in this movie. I think it's the latter, like it's the after two dates, just proposing before she takes a better job. In San Diego, and then afterwards, he just devotes all of his time to this middling wide receiver client to the point where he's never home. He doesn't need to be at every game. You're an agent, right? I mean, you have zero control over what happens on the field. I think this is why at the end of the day, it boils down to me to be sort of a bad football movie because he's not a good guy. Like, there are like very brief peaks of him being a good guy in a professional sense, but like the only thing that makes him an endearing guy through 1 hour and 49 minutes of the movie is that he likes the wisecracking kid, which who doesn't? You know, show me 100,000 people outside who wouldn't love this.
He doesn't just like the kid.
He loves the kid.
He loves the kid.
Wow.
Well, and that comes across. I mean, he's been, it's very clear that he loves the character of Jonathan Lipnicki.
He likes the kid more than Renee Zellweger.
That's what I'm saying.
So,
yeah. Yeah. And the last scene that we just saw, Renee is like looking at how her son is finally like showing affection to a father figure. And you can see the wheels turning in her head like, you know what? I'll stay in this marriage I'll just deal with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of like that long form piece you read the other day called The Crane Wife.
Yes.
Where all the needs weren't being met.
Yes.
And you know, you feel like you can live without all of your needs being met, but
she deserves better.
She deserves better. I mean, like, to your point, agents don't need to be at all the games. It's nice to show support. Think about the thousands of dollars he is spending to attend an entire 16-game season, only one of which is a local game, assuming that the divisions were still the same in the 90s.
Right.
But he would be playing the LA once a year.
Right.
If he played for the Phoenix Cardinals. And maybe San Diego is within driving distance if they happened to be on the schedule that year. Wasting a lot of money and resources crisscrossing the country.
By now, he does not have.
By now, the profit margin is zero, right?
I mean, well, I mean, it was zero.
Yeah.
Right. We're in like, we're deep into negative numbers here. So, you know, lots of concerning behavior all around. But his advice to Rod Tidwell was good, to play with his heart.
It seems to be working.
Seems to be working. Tidwell's having a career season as far as we can tell.
Before we, because we're about to get to the climax and the denouement of this film.
Wow.
And I want to hear from the guy in the room who has never seen this film. Right now, what are you thinking, Gary?
Well, I'm trying to move past the fact that in that montage, they had the Cardinals playing the Colts and the Steelers, which can't happen on the schedule. It's two different divisions. But
wow.
Once I move past that,
beyond
once
that
impossibility.
Yeah.
Again, the financials don't add up. But I'm with Connor. He's just he's not a good guy. Like, he wrote that thing when he was sort of in a, I don't know, it was unclear if he was just having some sort of mental breakdown that night when he wrote this this mission statement for agents, and that's sort of carrying him through. He made a very surfacey, brief kind of gesture, this symbolic gesture that he then really doesn't live up to other than being just like a handsome guy.
You know what Tom Cruise is? He's a taker. He just takes. You know what I mean? He just takes and takes and takes. And I want to see him give in this movie. We just don't see him give, right? He doesn't give anything to anybody.
No, that's a really good auditing of Tom Cruise.
he's got 20 minutes to do it here, so.
Yeah, I do remember there being a turnaround here, you know, and all that stuff. But to this point, like, you know, you have to consider the entire breadth of the film and the fact that, like, he basically screwed someone out of a better job in another place to this shotgun wedding, which he's visibly upset about.
Yeah, not loving
even,
that.
Even on the wedding, you know.
That wedding film is rough.
The wedding film is terrible. He's like furrowing his brow, like, you know,
right.
He's like, God damn it. And, you know, how is that good for, you know?
Apparently y'all think that he's a bad guy. I think that he is a complicated man. I think that he is.
Oh, complicated man is such a.
A cop out?
Yeah. It is.
Well, what do you think I am, Connor?
We're all complicated. You have to.
Are we?
You have to deal with it. Yeah. You have to do the things that you have to do as a man, as a husband, and as a father. And he's not doing any of
them. Well, what is he not doing? He's still out there trying to get Rod Tidwell the best contract. He's not cheating on his wife, and which should not be the highest
that's
ball.
That's not the barometer.
He's carrying a plastic baseball bat.
Right.
He's very involved in the child's life.
He cares about the kid. I don't know. I don't want to be the guy that's taking up for Tom Cruise with 30 minutes left.
He's not putting in the work, I think, is...
I don't think he's putting in the work. Theoretically, we're at the tail end of the NFL season. Maybe find a Rod Tidwell in college. Like, there's a draft coming up. You know,
so you want him to spend more money? You want him to just go around?
I want him to love Renee Zellweger and provide for his family. I don't think that's too much to ask.
Well,
can't have it all.
The only part of his manifesto that he's living up to is smaller client list. That one he's got very covered.
Yeah.
The rest of the areas, not so much.
He's disappointing me. That's all. We got credit time added onto this too. I mean, he's got like
it's about to happen.
He's got 20 minutes to make it.
I still have faith. I'm with Jonathan on this one.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens.
Thank you, Jenny.
Hit record on that.
Gosh, you had me at hello?
Connor, you almost like interrupted like the like peak sequence of the movie for Gary over here who hasn't seen it. Connor like started to talk right as he said was saying you complete me.
Oh, Gary. What's gonna happen next?
I will say that it is a beautiful speech, but there are some like random non sequiturs in there.
That like he's good in the living room?
He's like, they used to send me in to the living room and this was I love you, and like, you know, like, there's no, like, you know, and maybe that's how, like, it would realistically go in the moment, but then there's this whole, like, divergent thing about we live in a cynical, cynical world full of tough competitors, and then it's just like, but I want to stay married to you. Like, there's no, like,
yeah,
there's
what was no, the connector like, there? That's a good
there
point.
No, like, the, there was no A to B. Yeah.
The edited speech was much better.
You complete me, essentially.
Basically, yeah. The YouTube clip that you've seen, the one minute clip on movieclips.com.
Yeah, you complete me is solid.
And yeah. They have Rod Tidwell yelling, "Show me the money," and it just moves you.
He had the personal epiphany, which we all kind of saw coming. I don't know. Gary, you were on my side vaguely before this.
I thought we were solidly aligned.
Okay, and we remain so.
Yes.
Okay, so you're not in the camp that Tom Cruise has romantically redeemed himself because he just happened to miss his wife during a moment where his client missed his wife.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, what's going to happen next
Thank
season?
You. Wow.
That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, what, okay. So then you sign five more guys. You get some people back from Bob Sugar, and those guys don't like their wives. Those guys want to stay out and go in Vegas all weekend. And does he go to Vegas all weekend? And who's paying for Ray's college?
Honestly,
like, where is this money coming from? Mm-hmm. You know,
you guys are so cynical. All right,
it's like, cynical world.
Cynical world.
You got Listen, tough competitors.
There was. He went through a massive career change, and it was a transformational thing. And did he screw up a little bit on the way? Sure. Was he out there on every road trip when he was playing Gary the improbable Steelers and what was the other team?
The Colts. Like, it couldn't have happened that way,
right? Like, we didn't see him at the JW Marriott, like, just, you know, escorting three different women around. Like, he just didn't want to be around his wife because he didn't really know what he wanted because he was a lost soul. And that this transformational time when Rod Tidwell basically has a spinal injury and then he gets up and does the primetime dance and he's like, holy shit, I need to get back to my wife because I actually do love her. I just didn't necessarily know it. You know, I applaud Tom Cruise / Jerry Maguire / every other agent who has claimed to be the inspiration for Jerry Maguire because there's only like three or four of them out there. And you know what? This is a very touching moment. I shout out and salute Tom Cruise.
That was quite a monologue. That was quite a monologue, Jonathan. I'm impressed. I like your passion. I like your passion. I mean, I would say that this is a man who is, you know, realizing that he wants to open himself up to intimacy, deep intimacy, not just physical intimacy, but really opening himself up to a relationship in a way he hasn't before. And he's come back and he's not going to run. And, you know,
I'm going to say this in front of your sewing circle.
Is it a sewing circle? It's a divorced women's group.
Oh, okay.
I can't separate what he did at this moment from any child at a high school dance who just says, like, I love you, so the girl will make out with him.
Yes.
Am I right about that?
So like, here's the thing. Yeah. There is a scale, a continuum between lost soul and, like, you know, perfect husband and father. And he's not going to be perfect, but you gotta figure out what the balance is here. And he's like, I mean, he's hitting like 180 here. I mean, it's so much awfulness. It's not nearly balanced out by the couple of good moments. I guess I'm picturing in my head, I want to see the movie. I want to see the document, the 24/7 cameras on.
Yes.
And see.
Like, you have.
And then you lay that out. And then
show me marriage year two, year three, year four.
Okay, I'm not projecting him out to be the greatest husband in the world. All I'm talking about is right here and now. And Gary has him below the Mendoza line over here.
well below the Mendoza
like,
line.
I think that, like, I'm surprised that earlier in the film that, like, he wasn't screwing her over even more. You know what? Shout out to Tom Cruise. I'm not going to allow
You're
this.
Firmly if, in this camp.
I'm very, very much so. Listen, he was a fractured individual, and she allowed herself to, like, stick around. And I like, a lot of women wouldn't. Okay, that's okay. That's okay. That's okay. That's no problem.
I'm just saying, and getting back to the baseball analogy, he's Chris Davis right now.
He is Chris Davis.
He has had a couple of spectacular moments, but he's hitting like I said, he's hitting a .180. He's gonna strike out 300 times this year. I mean, it's too much to make the leap that this is going to work out
I totally agree. All right, so we're 5 minutes left in this movie. We got to finish this big scene, which I so rudely interrupted. The three of us
and got wrong.
Gary,
Forrest, Jonathan Jones.
He is just. I mean, this is why we only get him once in a while.
It just makes
it too good.
It just makes the podcast.
Yeah, just too good. So, Gary, what are your kind of final predictions here?
I mean, I think you'll see a short term sort of reconciliation and happiness, but I will lay my head down on my pillow tonight wondering what year two of this marriage is going to be, Connor.
I could not have. God, Gary, I'm so glad you came on. All right, so we're going to finish this out, and then just to kind of wrap up some quick thoughts here, obviously, you know, we're 50-50 here, but I'm going to see if we can bring a few more people over into the Tom Cruise is probably not a great long-term husband camp here, so let's see what happens.
Finish out with a little Bobby.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's funny that there's all these high-profile actors and stuff in this movie. This probably cost more than 90% of the movie. They got to use Shelter from the Storm by Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
I mean, that easily cost $300,000, right?
And real NFL game footage.
And real NFL game footage. Troy Aikman.
Troy Aikman, the
Emmett
broadcast
Smith.
Booth cameos. Yeah.
Dan Dierdorf.
Just a high-quality movie overall. I'm really glad we all agree on that. Yeah.
It's a quality movie. I've enjoyed the movie. I enjoyed your company most especially, more than anything, Jenny. Yeah. I don't get to see that often. I also really enjoyed Tom Cruise's character.
So,
who was a good guy, and this was a good movie.
Here's how we ended the movie. Tom Cruise and Renee Zellweger swinging Ray around this park. Tom is wearing the tightest pants I've ever seen.
No one wore jeans like that.
Nobody
wore
jeans
like that. Tight for the 90s.
They were
90s
tight. Not
tight for the here and now.
They were tight Levi's. And that it takes something to be some tight Levi's.
It is hard to find Levi's that tight. That being said, so
Tom Cruise is in some 28-30s.
So at the end of the movie, you know, these kids are playing baseball, and a ball flies over the field, and then Ray, the little kid, gets it, and he like wings it back over to the baseball field. And Tom Cruise's first thought is, "How can I exploit this for my own financial gain?"
You okay.
Know? Oh, come on.
I mean, this is just getting overly negative.
I mean, I'm not with you on this one, Connor, because I don't think he's going to stay in the marriage for that long to actually see the child get to age 18.
Wow. So here's the big mystery, too, that we need to get to, that we all, you know, so the contract offer did come in for Rod Tidwell at the end, and it is a juicy, lucrative 4-year deal for $11.2 million.
Connor's so excited about math.
He's been punching this into the supercomputer.
We've got that contract. We've got the other player in the hallway who's clearly going to dump Bob Sugar. Other players around the league who saw Jerry's embrace with Rod on national TV. We saw the ABC camera there. We saw the other cameras. Everyone was shoving microphones in this guy's face.
Endorsement deals. Double-digit percentage deals.
And then down the line, we've got Ray's baseball career. So you asked him how to come up with a way to make the business sustainable. To me, looks like the business is well on its way.
So you all think that Tom and Renee are going to be fine. Well, first of all, so Rod Tidwell is how old do we have we established how old
we're
going
to say like mid to late 20s, right? We're going to call him 26, 27,
let's,
right?
Let's call him 26.
Yeah.
So he makes it through the life of the contract?
With the concussion problems we saw?
Concussion issues, this spinal injury.
Excuse me, it's fully guaranteed, they said. You missed that
part. Oh, they said fully?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
we got
that
a Kirk
is where,
oh, wow.
This is where, this is ahead of its time.
Is Roy Firestone a journalist, or is Roy Firestone just reading a press
release? Well, I don't know. Roy Firestone still regrets that OJ interview. Have you ever seen that? I think it was in the 30 for 30, where Roy Firestone is like talking to OJ, and he's like, listen, those things, I know you had the problems with your wife, but that wasn't anything, was it, OJ? And like, Roy Firestone looks terrible. Anyway, but that same Roy Firestone.
So
this was a better appearance for him, I guess, is the point.
So you make $440,000 if you know through the life of the fully guaranteed contract. So I guess they're going to be all right, right? I'm worried about Ray. Yeah.
$440,000 over 4 years.
Yeah, but that, to Jenny's point, it's going to snowball into other things.
Absolutely.
Like, he just got his Steve Smith. That's what Rod Tidwell is now. Like, he is that cat who is going to be that dude moving forward. So now everybody wants to know who's the new hotness. Not the old bustedness that Bob Sugar was, but the new hotness that Jerry Maguire is.
And look, Troy Aikman even read his memo. Players are reading the memo.
It's out there.
It's out there. Everyone knows about it. The things that everyone thinks but no one wants to say. What was the name of it? Something like that.
Yeah, no, it was just like the Unabomber's manifesto.
All right, so I think I have a feel for the head count, but we'll just go around and just make it official for the record here to end this. I say bad football movie. I can't divorce Tom Cruise's freewheeling nature and the feelings that he just throws around for this poor woman that's in a very situation where she just doesn't need someone as flitty. Is Tom Cruise. So in that way, I say it's a bad football movie.
I'm going to shock you, Connor. I think Rod Tidwell, I think he raises it above the bar. I think they just crossed the bar into good football movie.
He was great.
And next
as
time
you pointed out, right? Best supporting actor he won
best
for
Best supporting actor, yeah. Right.
And next time I watch it, I'm going to close my eyes during all the Tom Cruise scenes, just like when I saw Ghostbusters when I was 4 years old. I'm going to close my eyes during all those scenes and just watch the Rod Tidwell movie.
Jenny?
Great football movie.
And you're fully sold on Tom in the long term.
Not really. I just love the movie. Yeah. Just playing devil's advocate.
Okay.
I'm not going to project into the future, but I will always, always agree with my colleague Jenny Varentis. Great football movie.
That's a safe. It's all historically has been the right place.
So Conda, the irony of the situation here is that in this room, you are Jerry Maguire. You're on your own.
Wow.
Oh. You're on your own.
I'm the perpetrator of this cynical, cynical world.
You just need your fish named
Flipper.
Flipper. I keep forgetting it. You're really nailing the fish name. So Connor, you've got Flipper. The rest of the room is against you.
Go out and prove us wrong.
Who's coming with me? No. Thank you, guys. Thank you, Bronx Brewery. Thank you, Montauk Brewery. This was all-timer fun, right? I had a great time. You guys have a good time?
It was awesome. Happy to be back.
Thanks for listening, guys, and be sure to download, like, subscribe, all the things you're supposed to do with podcasts. Do that with us. Thank you.